Is this?
No. Oh, okay. Sorry. We're going to start with Senate Bill 996, and this is a work session. Okay, what is not going to be heard? That's more interesting than what is going to be heard. Okay, we are not going to hear Senate Bill 930 at all. We are going to carry over Senate Bill 931. We are going to carry over Senate Bill 1031.
Will we hear those today?
That will be heard on Monday. And we are going to carry over Senate Bill 183, which is at the top of the schedule. There are amendments coming for most of these bills. One bill we're not going to hear. So we will hear Senate Bill... Okay, we're going to have the work session, as I said, on Senate Bill 930. I'm sorry, 996. And then we will hear House Bill 2658. Okay, so we will open, if we haven't already done so, the work session on Senate Bill 996. And Senator Johnson, would you come up, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I have the privilege of being the senator from District 16. I don't want to get in the way of a work session, but I just wanted to come and express my support for the bill. We've looked at the Dash 1 amendments. They're fine. I just wanted to tell the committee how much I appreciate them hearing this bill and to declare on the record my conflict of interest, as I am one of the dreaded baby boomers that this bill intends to assist.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yes. Do you have a comment?
Chair, Senator Johnson, just do what I do and refuse to get home, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Is now when I say it's not working, sir, or do I wait until after the work session?
Well, illusions are wonderful, aren't they?
I'll wait until after the work session to finish it.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Chair.
Yes. Do we have the Dash 1?
I move the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 996.
Would you like to talk about the Dash 1 amendment? I'm sorry.
Excuse me. Well, they've moved, and then we can talk if you would prefer. Mm-hmm. I don't think this committee has
a Okay, go ahead and move it, and then we'll talk. Senator Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 996. Objections? Comments? Hearing none. So ordered. Discussion. Talk about the amendments, please.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 996 originally required each area agency on aging to develop a comprehensive plan to plan for the future needs of Oregonians aged 40 to 64. The Dash 1 amendment changes it to a pilot project, so DHS will select one area agency in a rural county and one area agency in an urban county based on recommendations from all area agencies. It requires these selected agencies to develop and implement comprehensive plans for the future needs of Oregonians between 40 and 64. It requires DHS to contract with statewide agencies to coordinate the projects. It appropriates money to DHS to provide grants and contract with coordinating agencies. And it repeals sections of the Act on January 2nd, 2009, declares emergency effective on passage, and does still have a subsequent referral to legal means.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you like another motion, Mr. Chair?
Another motion, yes.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 996 as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz, 996 as amended.
You didn't
Oh, we didn't? I thought he did.
I did on the amendment. I asked for comments.
Comments, but not any opposition.
Aha.
Any opposition? I heard no comments or opposition, so I said...
Mr. Chair, I withdraw my motion because we're still in work session on the Dash 1 amendment.
Okay. The Dash 1 amendments. Comments? You want to move on to that? Okay. We're going to talk about the Dash 1 amendments.
No, Mr. Chair, I think what you need to do is say they're adopted.
Well, I already did that. I already said the dash ones are so ordered.
Okay. Are we having fun yet?
Yes, we're having fun. Not as much fun as we're going to have in the next bill, though.
Okay.
We're really going to have fun.
Mr. Chair, I move. Maybe I should delay this now. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 996 as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Cruz moves 996 as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. With discussion.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just would like to say on the record that I think that the makeup of the council and the fact that the bill really wants to be very inclusive in the planning for this, how we're going to take care of the baby boomer and the increased population is very good. I always am happy to see the inclusiveness of this body, and certainly this bill has tried to include some large groups that would be very helpful in the discussion.
Okay. And as parents of baby boomers, we want them taken care of, right?
Well, I don't know. I tell mine they better be ready to take care of themselves.
Good.
But I'm more than willing to vote for a bill that will plan on how to take care of them in case they don't succeed.
Now I'm confused.
Would you call the roll, please, while we're in a state of
euphoria?
Yeah.
Senator Montefiore?
Yes.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Morrison?
Aye. Okay. The bill passes to Ways and Means.
Chairman, I would just like to acknowledge the courtesy of your staff. She was great.
Thank you. Okay, we will now move to House Bill 2650, and we will have I'll open a public hearing, and you will read the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2650A. First defines entree or snack. It specifies minimum standards for food and beverages sold in public kindergarten through grade 12 schools, with the exception of food and beverage items sold as part of the National School Lunch or Breakfast Program. It specifies that nutritional standards apply to items sold during the regular extended school day. Allows school district boards to adopt more restrictive standards. Specifies that standards for entrees and snack items that are prepared on-site become effective for the school year 2008-2009, declares emergency effective July 1st, 2007.
Now, Janet Deal. Beer. And Keith Fiedler, would you...
Mr. Chairman.
Well, wait a minute now. Sharon Morrison, Morgan. Sharon Morgan and Janet, would you please come up?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think I'm violating the rules by having these good things here. Is it okay today, though? Need a snack?
Senator George wants permission of the body to eat healthy food during this hearing. He has carrots and little corn and what else?
Green pepper.
Green pepper. Pepper. Yeah. So could we deny him the sustenance while he...
I can share.
No, don't share. That's good. No, go ahead. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Morissette and members of the committee. My name is Janet Beer, and I am the food service director for Tiger 12 schools. I am a dietitian, and I have worked in school lunch programs for 25 years. I consider my job at the district to be a translator of rules and regulations for the staff that actually work in the kitchens. So my job is to tell them what and how and when and how much. I also am the president of the Oregon Child Nutrition Coalition, which is a buying group of 88 school districts throughout the state of Oregon. In that capacity, one of my responsibilities is to be certain the foods that we purchase meet the guidelines and regulations of both the state, our districts, and the USDA. I think it's safe to say that all of us that work in schools want to do what is best for children, and people in school meal programs are no different. I also have to say, when I was in school, I was always the kid who sat in the front, and I wanted to get the A. And my hope today here is that there can be some things added to this bill to make it more clear so schools will know when they're going to get a grade of an A. There are parts of this bill that I can't understand or I don't know how to interpret. For example, the bill speaks to snacks, and it says snacks that have eggs, cheese, and nuts are exempt from the FAT standards. It doesn't say what to do when you mix those products with something else. For example, you make a trail mix, you have cheese and crackers, or you have cheese melted on a baked tortilla chip. I don't quite know which of the standards to apply to that product, so I don't know what to say to my staff or the members of OCNC when they say, can we sell nachos? I have to say I don't know, and the bill is not clear. The bill also speaks to trans fats, and FDA makes the rules on labels and how they are defined. And FDA says a product must have 0.5 grams of trans fat or less in order to put zero on the label. The bill has chosen to use the words not any, which means absolutely nothing, I would assume. I think that's very clear. And so that not any doesn't mean 0.5, although in FDA language, zero means 0.5. If the bill went through as is, and we interpret the words not any to mean absolutely nothing, there are products that naturally have trans fats, like milk, cheese, beef, and turkey. They would not be allowed to be served in any amount if we're really going to serve not any. And again, I'm trying to get the A. I want to do what the words in the bill say. A number of other products, in fact, most commercial baked products, have small amounts of trans fats, not enough to be damaging to one's health, which is part of the reason FDA does not require them to be labeled. That includes sliced cracked wheat bread, saltines, rolls, hamburger buns, hot dog buns, many salad dressings. So the language in the bill really should say it must have zero trans fats or 0.5 or less if we're to be able to actually implement the bill. The other part of this bill that is a real concern for me is the bill is incredibly complicated. I'm a dietitian with 33 years of experience in the field. There are parts of this bill I can't interpret. The language in the bill says ODE may monitor the bill. May gives them permission, from what I understand. It doesn't direct them to actually do it. In my conversations with the staff at ODE, they have said they need two specialists and a support person in order to train schools how to understand, implement the bill, and then monitor the results whether or not we do it. So the bill doesn't provide the help that I believe schools are going to need in order to understand and implement this particular bill. I also am supportive of the statements that Sharon is going to make as to the entree portion of the bill, where there's a way to define it that makes it more clear and less costly for districts to actually follow the bill, but still get at most of the intent of the bill. So my hope today is you will clarify the bill, correct the language, add whatever it takes so that ODE can give me some help to understand the bill and make it so I can tell my school board we are truly in compliance because I really do want to get a grade of an A if this bill passes. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Senator George.
Did you folks ask for amendments on the House side?
We did.
And you brought this and they wouldn't deal with it?
They changed a couple parts of the bill, but no, the rest didn't make it.
You have language that you like?
Yes, it's in your handout on the back. Okay, I've actually taken the actual bill, crossed out, and written in suggested language.
I like that.
Would you like to go ahead?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Chair Morissette and members of the committee, my name is Sharon Morgan. I've been a registered dietitian, I'm scared to say, almost 30 years. I've worked with children and in schools for 10 of those years. Contributing to children's health has always been important to me, both professionally and with my own children. House Bill 2650 has the possibility of making a significant impact in schools. I firmly believe that adding several amendments to this bill will contribute to it being as impactful as possible. I believe my job, as Janet was mentioning, is to be a translator of nutrition information and standards to the public, in this case to students and staff. House bill is a good beginning. It embodies a layer. I believe we need an additional layer of clarification so that it can work in schools, and so really the goal of what this bill is intending to do can be had. My issue today is with the entree definition as it's written. Currently, the bill states that all entrees cannot be over 450 calories and that they cannot contain more than 4 grams of fat for every 100 calories. We sell a lot of foods in our schools and the secondary schools just a la carte, or the child walks up only wants a hamburger, say. When I've taken a list of the items that we currently sell and I evaluate them against this standard, I think that there is a simpler, more effective method to do this because a lot of the foods would be excluded. An example is, this is a cheese sandwich we served at my school today. Looks pretty good to me. Lots of good veggies. It's about 2 ounces of cheese, whole wheat bread. Under this bill, we couldn't serve it. It has too many fat grams per 100 calories, as I understand it. One of the other things we try to do in a lot of districts is to serve more vegetarian entrees. This isn't as easy to see, but it is some crackers, some sliced apples, and 2 ounces of cheddar cheese. We call this a grab-and-go. Kids say to me all the time, I want something I can walk away from the counter and take with me. We couldn't sell this. It's excessive in the fat grams per 100 calories. The USDA already has guidelines that school programs must follow. The USDA nutritional requirement handout, which is on the second page of my handout, identifies the total lunch calorie requirements that we are bound by USDA as a guideline to follow. And if you look at that, it gives you, for example, secondary school lunch, and we'll call that my high school student, a target of about 819 calories, and that is the same as saying a third of the RDA. If you say a milk is about 130 calories, and you say a treat or starch product might be 100, and if a child takes, say, a fruit and just a veggie, no dip involved there, you've whittled it down to about 489 calories just for the entree. Generally, our target is like 350 to 500 calories for the entree. We have we have fiscal limitations in that we have to balance our budget, and we have these USDA guidelines already in place. I have our proposal of limiting the entrees to those already offered under the National School Lunch Program would be a better way to get at the goal of curbing obesity and identifying entrees you can have on our counter or off the counter. I don't think the intent of the bill is to take away this cheese sandwich or this grab-and-go. They're really good food offerings. I support changing the mix of food items sold in the schools, and the bill, as written, is a good foundation. I believe that several clarifications and those mentioned by Janet are needed to make this as impactful and effective. I don't like spending my time at work where I don't really think I'm making a difference, and I want this bill to make a difference. Please consider the comments made by those of us in school food service who know our audiences, see them daily, and I think best understand the guidelines that are already in place by National School Lunch, and hopefully we can piggyback on some of those so that this is not also an extremely expensive bill for school districts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Over the weekend, I was watching a program in which it's one of the doctors who talks on the talk shows, and the person was talking about the low-fat milk and was cautioning parents to be really careful not to drop below 2%, that in fact calcium desorption has to have a certain level of fat in order to make the transfer. Are we going to be okay with low fat? Is the definition clear enough that we're going to make? I don't want to have us giving those children a milk product that deprives them of some of the things we hope that they would absorb.
I don't really think that would be a problem. If we're talking about a mixed meal, and I'm not sure how to quite address this,
right.
You're right in that you can't have too little fat. It's not a healthful thing. But I don't think that's really a problem in the mixed meal between this between the entrees and all the other foods involved. And in most districts, you see offerings of different fat levels and skim. So I think there would be an outside chance in the National School Lunch Program that you'd be having problems with that. Do you have any comments?
The beverage portion of this bill is fine. There were some amendments made in the House that pretty much match what we currently do.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You can drop those off. You're George, and you can see if they're...
Now I've embarrassed myself.
Okay. Keith Fever.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak, and I'll make it very brief. I'm here to talk very specifically about a particular factor of the bill.
I'm sorry, introduce yourself.
Yes, my name is Keith Fiedler. Up until 2 years ago, I was the food service director for Beaverton School District, 17 years as a food service director in education. I resigned my position there to found a corporation that develops products for healthier products for schools, and have been doing that since, and with some success. So this bill is really an anticipation, something I've seen coming for a long time, and actually have invested my life in starting a business to meet some of these needs. However, I also spent 17 years as a school food service director in large districts with budgets of $10 to $12 million. And I know how much pressure can be brought to bear on individuals in a school district who are really trying to juggle a lot of balls in the air, and they're trying to keep people employed, and they're trying to keep the nutrition where it should be, and they're trying to please their customers and their stakeholders and everyone involved. This bill is good for schools, there's no doubt. This bill is long in coming, and it's a courageous move in that being brought forward. This bill is needed, it's good for kids, it's good for schools, it's good for my company. However, I have one concern, and that is that the oversight and compliance of this bill could put school food service programs in a very awkward and difficult position, and specifically school food service directors who are in a often very politically charged position, where they have tremendous amounts of financial stress as well as customer service needs. I don't want this bill to fail over the next 5 years. I want it to have legs. I want it to go on. I want it to change the society over a generation. And I would like to see it succeed by having very well thought out issues for oversight and corrective action and implementation, so that you don't put school food service programs, which are the most controllable management tool to get nutrition into the schools, and pull the financial legs out from under them and frankly leave us in a situation that's worse than we started. That's my concern. Because I've been there, I've suffered that pressure, the financial pressure, and the pressure to not rock the boat when it comes to vending in the schools. And I was in a position where I had a high school administrator say to me, we had 17 vending machines in the dining room, and frankly it was way out of compliance with the USDA regulations. And when I brought it to that administrator's attention, I was told that has never been enforced, it never will be enforced, and I just need to leave it alone. And I wasn't told very nicely. So that is a real situation that they will deal with, and I'm not sure anybody else has said that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
And it might be that Janet or Ms. Morgan needs to answer it, but as a food services director and you're serving entrees, it's pretty explicit. 4 grams of fat per 100 calories and may not contain more than 450 total calories. I can see that being able to be controlled in the grade school levels, but in the high schools, if you're serving an entree, would that be hard to keep within 450 calories?
Yes, it would. My concern there would be that students will end up loading up on other things. Frankly, as a high school student, I consumed about 6,000 calories a day and was thin as a rail. You wouldn't know it now, but that's tough. I would rather have one of my colleagues who's a dietitian answer that.
Could they come up?
Yes.
Because I am thinking of the athletes and those that expend a lot of energy, although usually by lunchtime they don't do that. It usually happens after. But I know as my son in particular, when he was a teenager, just ate a horrendous amount and would get seconds. I guess you can always go back for two entrees rather than...
It is my concern that there would be some collateral damage, and I think I'm going to speak to your question. If you're hungry, you're going to be compelled to get food, like all of us. Hunger is a very, very powerful motivation. If you're not getting enough calories, your body will go get them. There's no doubt, and it'll get them in the form of sugar, fat, snacks. It'll get them in the fastest, easiest way that the base of our brain is conditioned to get them. The reason we crave those things is because historically they were hard to get. Our bodies want them very badly, and they will get them, and that will happen. I don't want this bill to fail. It is so desperately important. And I think it will happen. It has to happen. There's no doubt. But I'm very much concerned about it getting bogged down in implementation and de facto failing. I'm very concerned about it.
Representative Kotek is here, and she may have to leave soon, so we could call. You mentioned Janet Morgan. It's Janet Beer and Susan Morgan. So we can have you come up and respond.
Thank you very
much. Sharon Morgan, I'm sorry. Not yet. Tina, Representative Kotek, would you come up, please, and give us your testimony? You have to leave, and we want to accommodate you, and then we will have a response from the dietitians concerning the question that Senator Mona Sanderson had.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Chair Morissette, committee members for the record. I'm Tina Kotek, representative for House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. I'm one of the chief co-sponsors of House Bill 2650A, I guess it is now. And I primarily came today to speak to you about what we did over on the House side, and to let you know that I feel really strongly that this is a solid bill that you have in front of you. We did a lot of work on it in the House Healthcare Committee, and be happy to answer questions about the bill. But I just wanted to say, in particular, when we first got the bill, there were lots of concerns. Clearly, we're setting nutrition standards for our schools. We're trying to set some guidelines that we think are very important in terms of modeling good nutrition behavior in the schools, providing healthier choices for our students, not only to combat our obesity issue here in the state, but just in general provide better nutrition, not only in our vending machines, but in our a la carte programs. And so we did a lot. We heard a lot of testimony. We had several public hearings, several work sessions. We worked very diligently to make adjustments to the original bill. And I think what you have before you now is a very thoughtful as well as implementable bill, particularly around the timelines. We originally the bill was set up to be, I forget what the implementation date was, I think it was January, July. It was going to happen right away. We put an extra, we have 1 year one year delay in terms of changing selections in the vending machines. There's another 2 year delay for adjusting prepared food on sites, primarily to deal with the a la carte issue in the high schools. So there was a real understanding that this is not something that happens overnight. However, I would remind folks, and you might have heard this testimony already, we have school districts in the state who have implemented nutrition guidelines very quickly and at much more rigorous than what we're proposing in 2650. So it's not that it's not doable. We just know that every school is not going to be able to do it on the same timeline. We wanted to leave enough room for changing what they were doing in the schools, consulting the students, getting new product mix in their machines, adjusting what they're doing around a la carte. We also tried to make it more in line with what the national voluntary standards are with the Alliance for a Healthier Generation. We collaborated with the Oregon Soft Drinks Association to add additional beverages in at the high school that match what they were doing voluntarily at the national level. I think what else we did. We had some mineral and vitamin guidelines on the juices, and we were told, well, that might make it hard to sell Oregon apple juice because of the mineral vitamin content. We took that out. What you have, I think, is a bare-bones, nutritionally, scientifically sound approach in terms of calorie content, fat content, when it would have to be implemented, and I would just encourage your support of this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, but we really worked it very hard, tried to make your job a little easier, hopefully. So, thank you for having me today.
Senator Mona Sanderson, then Senator George.
In your testimony over in the House, I'm thinking of my two brothers who were extremely active and athletic and just ate voluminous. They were growing and they were eating voluminous amounts of food when they were in high school. So the only part of the bill that I have concerns with is the high school age and the entree, which is on page 2. Just because I'm looking not necessarily at the gals, but at the males that seem to eat a whole lot of food when they are teenagers. And I wouldn't have a problem if you set these standards, but I would be sending in nutrition drinks probably or something to supplement the calories that my son would possibly need. Did you have conversations about that?
Chair Morissette and Senator Monis Anderson, you know, I don't recall that conversation we might have, but I don't remember specifically. But I would just have a couple comments about that. I was an athlete in high school, and I had to supplement what I ate on top of the school meal. But I brought that in. The thing that I think we should remember here is that we're trying to set up some guidelines for the average student. We have an obesity problem in this state. We're not talking about the athletes here. In most cases, the real high-caliber athletes are going to be having additional food to supplement their diet anyway. I'm not really concerned about that. We're talking about the average student in the school who is eating the meal for the day and trying to encourage them to eat healthier by, you know, if we're going to teach nutrition in schools, we should be providing healthier choices, and we have to set some standards. And so I understand there might be particular individual cases, but I think for the average student, these guidelines are very sound.
Just follow up. Yeah. Well, I as a parent could, I'm thinking of those who basically have their breakfast and their lunch at school. That is their meals. They don't get them at home. And so, and if we limit the amount of food, and I'm only speaking high school because I truly feel that the guidelines that are set up in the most formative years are where obesity sets in is actually preschool, but their habits start developing very early. But I'm just wanting to focus on those older students, and especially those that I could send supplement food, but what about those that wouldn't be able to do that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Monis Anderson, I can see your point. I think it might, that's probably a question that some of the supporters who are the nutritionists could answer, but what I would say is, you're right. We have low-income students who this is their primary meal. What we're serving now in some schools is very high-caloric, high-fat food that is not healthy for them. That's the reality in some of our schools right now, that they are purchasing additional food, that they're in the vending machines and the a la carte programs that are not healthy for them. And that is what we're trying to address here. And I would hope, this is a fairness issue. We want to make sure that every child in the state is having access to healthier food. And so in some ways, there's even more of a reason to set these in standards for families who can't provide additional food for their child. We want to make sure that what they're eating in school is as healthy as it can possibly be. And I think that's the point we're trying to make here. There are always going to be differences with certain students, and as I always ate other people's lunches as well. I mean, those things happen if someone needs more calories. But at the bottom line, if they're eating one meal, how's the fat content? How's the calorie content? Is it really going to keep them, you know, address the obesity issue? And that's why we have to have some standards. But the nutritionists probably have a better sense of the caloric intake for a high schooler. That's beyond my scope of expertise.
Senator George.
Two questions. Number one, is there any fear that we're going to drive more children off campus? Of course, at this group, we primarily have them captive. That we're going to drive more children off campus. The other thing would be, is the Department of Education ready to do this monitoring if this, in fact, turns out to be a very complex process?
Chair Morissette and Senator George, thank you for those questions. In terms of the off-campus eating habits, there are a lot of reasons I think students go off campus. I don't think healthier choices necessarily means that they're not going to be edible choices. I mean, I think there are things, especially in the drink category, you know, the bill is pretty flexible in terms of sports drinks. You could even have a low-calorie, cola product there. I mean, there are some things that high schoolers are going to want to buy on campus. They're not going to have to go off. I think in the food lines, I think we can make healthier pieces of pizza and a la carte. They, you know, so I think healthier doesn't necessarily mean less enjoyable or less edible. So I guess I don't, I'm not too concerned. There are going to be reasons kids go off campus and none do what they're going to spend in school. The issue around implementation, we were pretty, we were very cognizant of the fact that we didn't want to put too much of a burden on the department. And so really it's up to the school boards to make sure their school districts are doing that. That's the way we wrote it. And I don't have the bill in front of me, but I think it's near the end where it says the department may evaluate and may monitor. That could be as simple as once a year, like they did with their wellness policies, turn in and let us know what you're doing. Could be that, or it could be more. And I think if, I think the question is, and we have a lot of folks who are going to be watching this, parent groups, who are going to say, maybe my school's not doing it. There's going to be a lot of local pressure. So I guess, I think the Department of Education could participate as much as they want, but we're not requiring it in the bill. Okay. Thank you for that question.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kotek, what were the nutrition standards 40 years ago?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cruz, we had nutrition standards for the federal school lunch and breakfast programs. Those are set by the federal government. There are no nutrition standards for currently, unless a school has implemented them, standards for individually, you know, products sold outside the lunch and breakfast, not that I'm aware of, unless the school district has set them up.
My sense is 40 years ago, we may not have been quite as sophisticated. I guess the point, Mr. Chair, is we're tying the obesity problem to food at schools. And 40 years ago, where there weren't standards, we didn't have the obesity problem. But
Mr. Chair and Senator Cruz, I would have to go back and look at the numbers. Our obesity problem has been growing in the state. And I agree. I do not think it's just a nutrition issue. I would also urge you, and I think you have passed along the PE requirements. It's also about less television watching. It's about a lot of things. But if you look at a lot of the reports, the one that just came out from the Department of the Oregon Health Policy Commission about how we can reduce childhood obesity, one of their top recommendations was setting nutrition standards in the schools. If we're going to teach nutrition, we have to model good behavior, and that means requiring some standards in terms of what we sell in the schools.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I just have to share, I remember going through the lunch lines when I was in school, and that was back in the 50s, okay, so that's a long time ago. But we had macaroni and cheese and lots of macaroni and cheese. And we had biscuits and gravy. I knew that was another favorite one that we had frequently. And, oh, corn dogs. That was just awesome. So I take a look at what we had. And we didn't, truly, we did not have the obesity problem back then like we do now. But we didn't have TV. I mean, we didn't get our TV until I was 8 years old. And but we were outside playing tetherball. And I mean, I felt far more active than the kids are now. So I think we need to get PE back into the school. So other than that, I mean, there's more to it than standards, although I do believe that we need to have standards in schools.
Well, and Mr. Chair and committee members, all of you, I think you're raising excellent points, and I think the nutritionists can probably talk to us somewhat. We've changed in terms of the portion size, the level of fat, the level of calories. Because I remember my school cafeteria meals. I would think they were a little more healthier, but I don't know. But I do know today that we're serving some very large meals with very high calorie content and fat content that we weren't in the past. So it's not just lack of activity. It's the type of food we're serving, what's in the food, how large the proportions are. That's the point around the calorie content, to try to limit some of that and say, do you really need 2,000 calories at a sitting? Probably not. That's, you know, bigger is not always better in this case. So.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for hearing the bill. I really appreciate it.
Senator Montes Anderson had a question earlier, or I guess it was maybe Senator George, and so would the nutritionist like to come up again, please, and respond to that question, if we can remember what it was?
I wrote it down.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, once again, I'm Janet Beer. Okay, first question was calories, and part of it was, I think, in reference to families of low income who qualify for free or reduced price meals. This bill does not impact the free and reduced price meal program. This chart is the rules for that program. And this chart, in fact, has 30% of the calories from fat, 10% saturated fat, 400 milligrams of calcium. So these meals are already seriously regulated and comply with the bill, or are, in fact, stricter in some portions than the bill. So those meals stay the same. So that's your question to that. Doesn't impact it. Question, will this have the potential to make students leave campus? Maybe. It depends on what the bill says, how quickly you have to implement it, and whether or not you can find products to replace it if students still want to purchase those kinds of snack items. Portland Public Schools a year ago decided to eliminate a la carte sales. If you look up their budget for last school year, the food service department lost $900,000 on a $12 million budget. That was probably all out of a la carte sales. Other districts I was talking to today that have implemented strict standards this year are guessing they're losing half of their a la carte revenue. So that can be significant. So some of that is the speed for how quickly you do it, what you replace it with, and is the student store still selling gummy worms? And if they do, then, you know, your money goes over there instead of across your counter. So it has the potential. Not a done deal, but it has the potential. My problem with the entree definition...
now, are you responding to their questions?
Yeah.
Because they had some specific questions.
I think I did.
Because I don't want to go through the whole thing again.
Okay.
So...
One of my questions was on the entree and the teenagers.
Right.
I had a concern regarding limiting the amount of food that a teenager, not female athletes, at least as I remember, I didn't need to eat as much as my brothers. I mean, there was a tremendous difference between what my brothers ate and what I ate. We were both extremely, and we were all extremely active, and I wanted to know if this would impact high schoolers.
The bill doesn't say the student can only buy one entree. And so the student who's not buying a reimbursable meal, who wants two hamburgers, if it meets the definition, simply buys two hamburgers. Oh, that's the same for any of the components that we sell now. There's no limit on the number. And that would be difficult, if not impossible, to enforce,
yeah,
because
right.
Teenagers are creative and get the friends in line and come back twice and go to two different places. And so that you can only approach with education in the classroom and role modeling by the adults.
And when you mentioned the entree issue, what I was hearing you say was you had the concern with the calorie limit of the 450, and was that too low, if I heard you correctly? I would contend that the bill as it's written would be better if it had the piece, which is the next to the last page on the handout Janet gave, which is saying that the entrees drop the 4 grams per 100 calorie restriction, which is sort of a chokehold, and instead say maybe sold a la carte if it's offered on a USDA reimbursable meal and is the same size or smaller. Because if we can sell a hamburger with a reimbursable meal and it's okay, and now in this new House bill as it's written, in our hamburgers we sell, we cannot sell a second hamburger, I'm not sure what we tell that student. It's against the law to sell you a second hamburger because it has too many grams of fat per 100 calories. It's not a bad hamburger. It's not that we're buying cheap, fatty hamburgers. It just is over by this number. So if we could keep this saying 450 calories for items sold a la carte entrees, we think that's fair. But to drop the 4 grams per 100 calories. So when we sell this great little whole wheat tortilla, which now I can't open, with cheese, and most of us would think... of course, this was made a couple hours ago. This is really, sorry. Yeah, I could throw it. It makes a good frisbee. But this is really popular at our schools. Use a little imagination. And it's good cheese. It's commodity cheese. It's a whole wheat tortilla. Kids love this. They put salsa. We could not sell this. It's on my handout here on one of the nutritionals. You don't have to look it up. It meets the calorie level. It's under the 450. It has too much fat per 100 calories. So if we could dump that in this, that's what we're asking. It makes life sane. It's a good product. Kids like it. Vegetarians like it. And we need the calcium. There you are, concerned with the calcium, and we have to throw this away.
Give that to him. Don't
throw it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mary Lou Henrick, would you come up with this? You don't want that one?
These look good.
Did you want to bring...
I want Nancy to come, too.
Yeah.
Okay, Nancy, back.
I'm sorry.
Senator Morissette and committee, thank you for having the hearing today.
Now, before you start, I want you to talk about the flexibility of implementation of the program.
We will do that. Wanted to first clarify a couple of things that I think have gotten a little bit fuzzy here. Number one is...
Oh, introduce yourself.
Mary Lou Henrich. I am with Community Health Partnership and part of the Oregon Nutrition Policy Alliance. I have some written testimony. I'm not going to go through that today. And I have just a couple of points that I want to make, but I think I want to respond mostly to get clarity on kind of what the bill does and what the bill doesn't do. Number one, the bill does not, and I think Janet Beer did say this, but I want to say it again, does not affect school lunch or school breakfast. That's the line that everybody goes through and gets the full unitized meal, an entree. And I think the confusion is you get an entree there, okay? But we're talking about selling a la carte entrees that are not part of that unitized meal. So the low-income children don't have pocket change often to buy the entree. Sometimes they do, but they are on free and reduced. They get the unitized meal, an entree, a fruit, a milk, that whole kind of package of foods. Those lunches and breakfasts are regulated by the USDA federal government. These entrees sold on their own is probably something different that wasn't there 40 years ago in school. When you went, Senator Moss Anderson, and got your macaroni and cheese, you probably got it with some applesauce or a salad or an apple or something. No. You didn't just go over and buy a little boatful of macaroni and cheese.
I didn't have money.
Okay. Even if you had, you probably couldn't have bought it. But I think we've responded. Society's changed. So we kind of have this consumer mentality about, well, let's do something to offer some other ways that kids that have money in their pocket can buy some other things. And some of those things, we contend, have gotten too big, too fat-laden, and they shouldn't be offered as a simple single entree. If they're offered in the unitized lunch, so the hamburger that's offered as part of the lunch, you get a salad, or you get fruit, you get low-fat milk, and so it kind of over the whole thing is not a bad meal. So that's just one. This does not do anything different to the school lunch or breakfast program. I think also I'd like to, since Christy Obink, the director of Portland Public Schools, who did testify in favor of the bill as it's written, at the House hearing, it isn't here today, but when they quoted that she lost about $900,000 on a whatever millions-dollar budget it was, yes, indeed, that was out of the a la carte sales. What Christy has said is she has made up for that by selling more of the unitized lunches and actually having a higher free and reduced usage. More kids who have free and reduced lunch and the federal government pays for them. She's made more money by having more of the kids go through that line because they haven't taken what pocket change they had and bought something unhealthy. She decided to go cold turkey and not sell a la carte. This bill does not say you have to do that. It just says if you're going to do a la carte, then you need to meet the calorie and the fat guidelines. The next thing I'd like to do is point out, I gave you this today. This is exciting today. This is today, the Institute of Medicine, National Academy.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Senator George.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You may have answered one of the questions I had, and that was, you know, you're going to influence usage by what's out there. But if, in fact, you reduced over these purchasable entrees, things that they might have wanted to buy, then they may, I hadn't even thought about that, they may shift then over to the normal school lunch program. And because those things that I wanted to buy, I can't buy, so I'm going to go buy something that...
Yes.
Okay.
And we, Senator George, we think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because we think that is where, and if you read through, I highlighted a few things. The Institute of Medicine came out with this today, hot off the press. And it says, and I highlighted a few things, but we need to establish school nutrition standards and limit access to competitive foods. And that a la carte is a competitive food to the National School Lunch Program. And I also talked with Patty Whitney Wise from the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force yesterday, and she was actually going to contact some of you about the fact that they are convinced that if children don't have those competitive foods available, or that they're not gargantuan, et cetera, that they will be more likely to eat the full meal, which will make them have healthier diets and be healthier. And for low-income kids, this is one of their you know, major sources of calories. The other things
question.
About... Yes.
Yeah, thank you. I want to get to, you know, I think overall we know we like most of the bill, so I'd rather talk about the little pieces that
sure.
there seems to be conflict. And may not contain more than 4 grams of fat per 100 calories. I quickly looked at this new one. They aren't quite as prescriptive. They say, well, they say...
35% center mass energy, which is
which
the same
is.
Thing. That is what? If you take do the calculation, it's the same thing.
Okay,
35%.
That answers that question. Mm-hmm. But the trans fat, they say less than or equal to 0.5 grams per serving.
Yes.
And they have brought that up, and that's what's in here.
Chair Morissette, Senator Montes Anderson, I'm going to let Nancy Becker answer this issue on the trans fat, and we believe it can be handled by a rule definition, but... Explain this, Nancy.
Okay. Hi, my name is Nancy Becker. I'm a registered dietitian. I teach nutrition at Portland State University, and I'm the chair of the School Food Working Group of the Oregon Nutrition Policy Alliance. About the trans fat issue, trans fat is present in minute amounts in dairy products. It's not, as you heard before, present in beef and turkey. It's in dairy products because the bacteria in the rumen of bovine animals makes trans fat. Okay, so it's present in very small amounts in dairy products. I did a little checking around, and in a cube of cheese, a 1 ounce cube of cheese, you would have 0.02 grams of trans fat. This is a minuscule amount. If there would be if there would be an amount of trans fat in the cheese large enough to push it up, they'd be eating a mountain of cheese. Okay, it's absolutely smoke and mirrors here. Saying there's no trans fat means virtually no trans fat.
Senator Cruz. But the bill specifically says may not contain any trans fat. That is not saying you can have 0.0 anything.
Well, I think my understanding is that first of all, the way we wrote the bill, it said zero trans fat, and legislative counsel rewrote it to say any trans fat.
Well, and that
so that may be for a legal reason.
And I don't, I'm not sure what the legal reason is, but this is very explicit language.
Right.
And so if milk has trans fat, you couldn't serve milk because it says may not contain any.
Well, none of the milk that's served in schools now would have any trans fat in it because it's going to have an unmeasurable amount. It's so minuscule. It is none. It is essentially none.
Mr. Chair, but there is a definitional difference.
It would be zero by anybody's standards. And certainly if it's non-fat milk, it's going to have zero. And if it's 1% milk, it'll be zero. I checked with Dr. William Connor, who, you know, is the big fat guy. I mean, fat professor. He's not fat himself. But that's you, and he confirmed it's an absolute, unbelievably insignificant quantity.
But, Mr. Chair, but it still exists in an insignificant quantity, which... would not be allowed in this explicit language.
It's our understanding, sir, that we could probably get an administrative rule to clarify that language.
No,
it's a clarification.
Not if it's in statute. We'd have to change it.
This is going to go into law.
Yeah.
Senator Montes, Senator Verger, I'm sorry.
Well, there has to be a difference here because it has zero trans fat in the federal guidelines, and yet they're able to use up to 0.5 or whatever it is.
0.5.
And so that zero does equate to a certain amount in the federal guidelines. So I don't know why it wouldn't work the same. I think using any in the language was a mistake. I think if they had used zero, then you would fall in the same category as the federal, and it would be the same.
Are you talking about the federal labeling requirements?
No. I'm talking about, I just read it on something that they handed to me, that the dietitians talked about, the trans fat definition. When it says any, it actually allows them to use help me here, somebody.
Yeah, I saw it,
0.05, or what is it?
0.5.
So by using zero, and zero is not any. I mean, zero and not any.
Okay, it's
or none is all the same.
Yeah, the issue here is of portion size, because you're talking quantities of fat.
No, the issue is statutory language. I don't. You can spit all the hairs you want, but we're talking statutory language,
and
you
guys
need to be exact.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I you know agree with Senator Cruz that if we're talking,
we would be Senator Morissette. If I know it will delay things, which, of course, isn't what we're hoping to do, because I know it would have to go back through a legislative council or somehow you'd have to get that word change. We have no problem with it saying either zero trans fat, which in definition means it can have this minuscule amount, or what I'm reading on the Institute of Medicine wording that they're saying is trans fat free, and then they have that meaning less than or equal to 0.5 grams per serving.
Okay.
So I guess I'm saying I don't know whether that's something you can ask Ledge Council.
But we're gonna fix it.
Okay, we can fix it.
We're fine
with it.
Now wait just a minute. I'm interested in the implementation of the program.
Okay.
And whether now there's a timeline for this to be implemented. That's up to 2 years.
Yes.
And during that timeline, is how much flexibility is there in the statutory language, if any? Now, the good part is there is time to implement, which means that there could be in the next legislative session, if there is a glitch that is found during that time period, it could be fixed. But I don't want to put something out that is going to eventually mess the whole thing up because we were not precise in the language. So that's the concern. It's not a huge concern.
No.
I mean, I don't think that it's going to, make it. But I'd rather be precise and not give people reason to challenge either on the floor of the Senate or in some other place in the school district. So, anyway.
Senator Morissette, was that a question? Or
Now, wait a minute. Did you have a question?
Well, I just wrote something here. It says, push me a little, okay. Push me a lot, no.
Uh-huh.
It won't happen.
Okay.
And so I really think you're running a risk to have that language in there and not the language that's on the handout that was given to us, which is, here we go, trans fat, less than or equal to 0.5 gram per serving. Let's just put that in there.
Okay.
And remember, don't push me a lot.
Question two. Yeah. So, and I want to make sure, I think you said it, but I want you to say it again for the record. When we're talking, because this was what the nutritionist from Tiger Tualatin was saying, 4 grams of fat per 100 calories, and in the guidelines you gave us, no more than 35% of total calories from fat. You're saying that means exactly the same thing.
It's not exactly the same, because 4 grams of fat per 100 calories is 36%. And that is 35%. But it's substantially the same. It's within
heads nodding this way in the back. And so
well, 4 times 9 is 36.
Yeah.
And 36 divided by 100 is 36%.
Yeah.
That's what that means.
Yeah.
And so it's essentially the same. It's essentially the same amount. Because nobody has the numbers to be more precise than about 1 or 2% in something like this anyway.
That's why I wish stuff like this could be done in rule rather than put it in statute, because...
Senator, 35% is what it is.
Okay. Wait a minute. Time out. My feeling is that in implementing a bill such as this, we are setting a standard for all school districts to be built upon in terms by the school district. I mean, I think we're putting a floor. You know, the idea of the wellness program was, well, I don't even want to get into that, because it was a voluntary program mandated by the feds, and we duplicated that by statute. That didn't mean a thing, because some schools didn't even do a wellness program. And so the wellness program was not is not an adequate program to implement for a big, you know, for the solution. And so I'm hoping, and I see this bill as something that is understandable, that is a floor that does have some flexibility. And I think the waiting, you know, the implementation period, and there's always legislative fixes to come along later if something is a glitch and it's too vague or too stringent, that can be fixed. And so I'm hoping, and I know we're going to pass this bill out, but I just want to get it right. And it takes some time to do that, perhaps. Senator.
Mr. Chair, I like trans fat free. I like what they have over here in these guidelines that says trans fat free, less or equal to the 0.52 per serving. I think that's very clear.
I think we need to take a look at language here and make sure we're getting it right.
Yeah, trans fat free is it to me makes it a lot easier to understand.
Step button. Oh, does that mean no trans fats?
That means, and it has, trans fat free, less than
less than or equal
to.
Yeah, right. That's in a recognized standard.
Okay. Senator Morissette, I think that on the trans fat issue, that when we had the bill crafted in legislative council this summer, you know, and that process, I think things were... when people talked about no trans fat, zero trans fat, things like that, we weren't as kind of evolved as we are now. And I think the issue of those minuscule parts that are already in naturally occurring, they aren't added. You know, I think we're no problem with whatever makes it as clear that we want as low a trans fat as possible, and that however we word that. And it seems like the Institute of Medicine coming out today, maybe the best wording is, Senator Verger, trans fat free with the parentheses, less than or equal to, because it's been very clear. I have no problem with that. It's just the process of how does that happen. One other thing that I wanted to kind of respond to that came up earlier was, you know, Senator Cruz's question about 40 years ago and kind of what's the difference? And I would maintain, Senator Cruz, that 40 years ago, we were not selling a lot of competitive foods on top of the school lunch program. Even when my children were in high school, I have a 32-year-old daughter and a 27-year-old son. And they both told me that it was kind of in their era when it went from having one soda machine kind of back by the gym to all of a sudden having 15 or 20 of them with all kinds of foods and beverages. So I think that, and school stores. So I think there was some added foods that came into the school on top of what was the school meal. And I'm not saying, and we are not saying, that this is the answer to childhood obesity. We are simply saying, let's get some rules on those other foods that are being sold, and let's, just kind of take care of this one and then figure out how do we get more and more healthy foods into the schools. There are other bills floating around on farm to school and some subsidization for the school food service directors who are in a bind trying to do the best they can with that whole lunch with no added funding. So I think there are a variety of things, but our major contention has been let's regulate the stuff that's sold outside the school lunch program. Do it reasonably. We followed the California, New Mexico. There are several other states. And now the Institute of Medicine basically saying put those 35, 10, 35 guidelines in. And that seems to be becoming what is the recognized standard for competitive foods and for anything that and an a la carte entree is a competitive food. So that's... I guess, unless you have other questions, that's about what I need to say.
Mr. Chair, vending machines, things like that, are clearly a separate issue from my perspective from the prepared meal in a school. And I would agree that a better mix in that universe is clearly called for. I have no issues with that. I guess what I'm looking at is how complicated we make the prepared meals in schools, and how the nexus is between those full prepared meals and the a la carte selections from that prepared meal. I just don't want to see us making something. And, Ms. Chair, I'm going to need some more time to really read this a little bit more, but this confuses me, and to a degree. And I just want to make sure that I'm with you on driving to nutrition. I truly am. I just want to make sure we aren't driving people insane getting there.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator George.
I probably can bring this into clarity. Back in the 50s, the Future Farmers of America, we control all the vending machines. Okay? They refer to us as the food... I better be careful how I say this. Anyway, they thought we were organized crime. Okay? It was really interesting. We were allowed to have... The administration allowed one soda machine. Okay? And I... Many times, because I was president at the end of this story, I would go out and service the machines. We also had a lot of milk machines and a lot of fruit machines. Okay, that was it. That was all there was. The sales really were probably in the area of the fruit and the snacks that were there, similar to this, and the milk, and probably 35% of the soda pop. And it didn't seem to change much, because that was the choice you had. If you wanted that soda, you had to go out there to buy it, and this was more affordable. And so it's, people can be directed to make good choices, because we did consume an enormous... When Senator Mona Sanderson was describing that, I thought, oh my gosh, sounds like my cousins and I. If there was food, it was gone. But we were very, very active. But what I'm worried about, is that we don't become food Nazis. I don't want to have that happen to these children. Or they're paranoid. We'll be dealing with psychological problems with their food. Just allow them to make good choices. And so if we can keep that in balance, mm-hmm. then I will be happy.
Yeah. Can I respond to that?
Yes.
I really hear what you're saying. That really resonates for me. I've been a dietitian for 30 years, and I'm always called the food police. I'm not the food police. But it seems to me that we want to make the healthy choice an easy choice for kids. We don't want kids to have to fight their way through the junk food to find something healthy. And that's what's really behind this, is to make the healthy choice the easy choice. In the a la carte lines, we've seen things like plates of French fries that are about 800 calories. So that shouldn't be a kid's lunch. When my kid was in middle school, I'd say, what did you have for lunch? And he said, a plate of JoJo's and a Gatorade. That's purchased in the a la carte line. Well, we should make it hard for a kid to get a lunch like that, not easy for a kid to get a lunch like that. And he's a big, strong athlete, but it's still not a good lunch for him.
Good. We're going to have to move along. Thank you.
Okay.
Dan Lind, would you come up, please?
Introduce yourself, please.
Thank you.
Meeting your
Chairman Morissette and committee members, I'm Dan Lind. I have a vending business, vending machine business in Corvallis, and I'm also on the board of directors for the Northwest Automatic Vending Association. I just wanted to state for the record today that we're not really opposing the elementary or the middle school way the bill's written, but on the high school level, the prepared items are to be implemented in the 2009-2010 school year, whereas the vending machines and snack items in them would be the 2008-2009 school year. And we're just asking that if we could have another year also, the manufacturers need to come up with the products, the packaging sizes, and something to sell out of the machines.
That's a good request. It's interesting, and because my hope and theory was that the vending machines would still be viable a viable vending machine, and the manufacturers will come up. Now, it will not be implemented during the 07 school year.
That's correct.
And so you would like an additional year?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, good. Any? Okay. We'll take that into consideration.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, yes.
Is Ventilator still in business? That's the machines we used to run.
It became Vendo, and Vendo is still in business.
Yeah, I used to walk by and know how to just give them that and get them working again, or take them apart, too.
All right.
That was a qualification for being the FFA president.
You could measure with the elbow and the product would come out? Is that what you're saying?
Where the change holder was?
Yeah.
Well, right there.
You got the change
holder. I got it. I could do it today if you had an old machine.
Change the mechanism on your machine, please. Okay, thank you.
Thank you
very much. Edward. Come up and give us your name and your occupation.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Edward McLone. I'm a senior at Beaverton High School. Also, I work for Representative Reed over on the House side, but I'm only speaking for myself.
Okay. Well, I didn't mean that as your occupation. I saw
a
student, so I figured you were...
Yes, I just thought that important to point out. My boss told me to do so. But I'm coming here before you in support of this bill as a student. I don't have a special interest group. I don't work for anybody who's got a special interest group. This is simply a student's perspective. Now, this bill is really important to us as students, and Senator Mona Sanderson, since you're stepping in, I think I'll address one of your concerns that you brought up throughout here. Great timing. You were concerned that students...
Introduce yourself over again for the benefit of Senator
Mona Sanderson. Hello, my name is Edward McLone. I'm a student at Beaverton High School. And I'm a senior, so I'll be graduating soon. But you brought up the concern that students who are athletes couldn't get enough healthy food, or they couldn't get enough food, period, and that they eat like vacuums. And quite honestly, that's correct. But as the previous people who have spoken have told you, this bill doesn't stop you from coming back or bringing your own food. And also, I found that when you eat healthier food, you fill up a lot faster. Fatty, high-calorie food with low protein makes you rounder, but it doesn't make you fuller. Let's make you fuller and a little less round. I think it's a good compromise. So just to address a couple other concerns, and I'll make this brief because you do have my written testimony, that I was visiting friends at Tualatin High School, and you've seen examples from Tiger Tualatin of the types of food they have here, but what you don't see stacking up are the unhealthy options that they provide, and those are quite bountiful. At Tualatin, I know students can purchase rather large-sized bowls of ice cream with, M&M toppings on it, or chocolate syrup pumped onto it, or a combination of both, which are available. That's what's concerning about stopping if we don't pass this bill, is that this is still around. Senator George, you stated that let's allow kids to make good choices, and I completely agree with that. But the problem is, in current standards today, our schools don't allow for students to make good choices. They provide foods which look healthy, but I remind you, it's cliche, but looks can be deceiving. These foods are not as healthy as they may appear. So let's let kids make good choices, and please pass this bill. Thank you.
Any questions?
Since he's a senior, I gave him a grade. He gets an A+.
Oh!
My parents will be quite happy. You want to send that to them?
Yeah. Oh, he's going to sign it. Good.
Thank you, Senator.
You can come up here and get that.
You can have it too.
But don't.
Well, he can take it to his boss.
Thank you.
Oh, that's good job, by the way. Very excellent.
Very good. Okay, Elise Brown and Linda Fleming, would you both come up, please? So, where is your friend Mel Cohn?
It looks like maybe he left.
Well,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Linda Fleming. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Coalition of Local Health Officials. We represent Oregon's 34 local health departments. I don't have a lot of prepared statements for you today. To be quite honest with you, I live in Fossil. I had intended to go home last night, and when I saw this bill was up today, I purposely spent the night at the local Red Lion so I could be here to tell you that your local public health officials strongly support House Bill 2650 and encourage that you do so as well. I'm primarily here here to remind you what this really is. This is a current and continuing and future public health issue. Childhood obesity will eventually become diabetes and other chronic disease in young adults and older adults, and we're all going to be taking care of those folks, and quite frankly, we might be some of those folks. So I hope that as you deliberate this bill, you remember that this is what we're really talking about is prevention. Preventing a public health crisis that's going to cost Oregonians in today's dollars and in future dollars. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Okay. Are you going to drive home tonight or are you going to have to stay?
Mr. Chair, as soon as this is over, my Monte Carlo is headed east.
Wow.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, Elise Brown representing American Diabetes Association. And my pleasure to be here this afternoon. And we had an earlier opportunity over on the House side to share our desire and support for 2650. First, I want to divert a little bit and give Edward another round of applause. He's a terrific staffer to work with, and I didn't realize he was a senior in high school, and I'm a little shocked. I'm a mother of a son who's a year younger than him, so that makes me feel like a very old lady, but good for you, Edward. Appreciated hearing your comments. Again, here today representing the more than 250,000 Oregonians with diabetes, and so for that reason, this bill is very important to us, and I wanted to submit publicly two pieces of testimony, one from the ADA and another from a very dear friend of the ADA, letter that you all have received earlier, so it's not being routed to you at this moment. You should all have it, and that is from Darlene Kane. Many of you have met her. She's been down here in the building a lot, and she is the national chair of the American Diabetes Association. And she's also, in her own life as a mother, done a lot of work with on the school board, and particularly the legislative committee for OSBA. So she's very sensitive to all the issues that have been raised in terms of local control and such. But obviously, as a diabetic and mother of diabetic, the issue remains very close to her, and the need to be a leader in terms of school nutrition is very important to her. In her testimony, I do want to publicly point out a couple of things, because I think while we're having the discussion whether or not this is relevant for high school age kids, it's important that I point these facts out. And that would be from the statistics that have been gathered from the coalition at the State Oregon Department of Human Services Diabetes Control Program. What a mouthful that is. And these statistics come from that study. And these are relevant to 2005 Oregon teens show these statistics, that the percentage of 8 graders and 11 graders who are overweight or at risk of it with BMIs above 85 percentile is 24%. The percentage of Native Americans in the same category is 31%. And the percentage of African Americans in this category is 30%. So clearly, with those facts, 24% of our Oregon teenagers are in this category. So I think that the relevance to look at this issue at the high school level is even more important because of that. Two things that cause diabetes, and again, why we're interested in this issue, are genetics and the environment. And while we can't change kids' genetics, their genetic makeup, we can help them with the framework of better environment. We've talked about the national progression, and the obesity epidemic didn't occur back when Senator Cruz was in high school or when Senator Mona Sanderson or Senator George was in high school, but we had obesity issues then. They've only grown over the years because of the environment that we all live in. And now I guess I'm starting to rant as a mother, and you know, what I see on TV now is supersize this, supersize that. It's that that's causing a lot of the problem. It's not enough PE in our school, in our high schools in particular. And yet my son's a great athlete too. He has the benefit of playing on his high school tennis team. Not every kid is able to play on a high school team at all. And those that don't, they have maybe they have the benefit of freshman year PE, but after that, it's an elective. So I only throw that out because again, focusing back on the high school years, it's more important than ever to take a look at doing a better job on our nutrition front. And yes, we got to look at PE, and yes, we got to make sure that parents are saying the right things and teaching their kids the right things to do about nutrition. But let's put our foot down on this issue now, and let's not create any more opportunity to have another child be diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. And that's my comments today, and I hope you'll consider your support and joining us in support of 2650. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator George.
One of the things that we've been doing a lot of work on this relative to alternative health care. One of the things that we discovered, a book that was written a few years ago called Eating for A's, and how many of you are familiar with that book, Eating for A's? All right, what they did is an inner city school, and they took those children, completely changed their diet, and they gave them healthy food. The thing that was amazing, test scores started like this, behavior problems went like that. And I hope that I see some head nodding that you agree that that will be the outcome of this. So I think there's more to say about this than just the obesity, and that you'll have behavioral changes, you're going to have grades moving up, and because we know you have to feed this machine too, and if it isn't fed well, it doesn't work well.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify? Run the gamut. Oh, before we close the public hearing, Scott Bruin, State Representative, submitted a letter that each of you have, and we will introduce into the record. And I'll let you read it. With that, we will close the public hearing. We are going to do an amendment to fix the trans fat, and we will bring that back as soon as the amendment is done. It probably will not be done until
the rush
is over, but we have time, and we will take care of this.
We have a month.
Well, we will.
Yes, we do have a month.
Yeah. But we hopefully will not use all that. Anyway, so I will close the public hearing on this bill, and I will open. No, don't panic. I'm going to open a public hearing. Don't panic.
Don't panic.
I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 931, and I'm going to submit this piece to you for your consideration, and then I will close the work session on 931. This piece has been distributed for your information, and we will hear 9:31 as a work session on Monday, perhaps, because there's something else going on with it.
Okay.
So that, I just wanted to get that out to you. And we are adjourned.